Welcome to La Liga Weekly, where Real Madrid are top after doing some Real Madriding, overcoming a Valencia team managed by the villain of La Liga, Jose Pepe Bordalas, who seems ready to boo everybody, work hard, run around lots, and pressurise opponents. Actually, it's a good job Real Madrid can score every now and again, because no one else seems to be able to kick the ball into the net. Three more goalless draws this weekend has taken us to 8 out of 47 games, although it doesn't help when referees send off players when they get fouled. Yes, João Félix red carded as Atleti were held. If only they had a striker like that guy Rayo Vallecano have just signed. Falcao is back with a ban. Never did get why Atleti sold him to Monaco all those years ago, before his injury, before his two-year stay at a health bar where they pay you £250,000 a week, or as he calls it, the Premier League. Terry Gibson is in Barcelona. By the wonders of modern technology, he's in a hotel room that could literally be anywhere. Go, Terry, go and sit out at the Guarda Familia or something, so we know where you are. Terry is in.
Trying to find some proof nearby, there isn't any.
Terry is in Spain, where he's been working on all of the La Liga games that have happened this weekend, which... You know, given that they don't really feed you, they're not lavishly treated at La Liga TV. It's a shift. You've earned your money this weekend. So everyone, Patreon.com, which is patreon.com/LTEL, and you get extra stuff that we do, and you can support the podcast, which would be nice. Thank you very much, and thank you to all the Patreons who do that. Already we did a sneaky little Patreon one at the end of last week where we looked back on all of the European games. Terry is going to the Barcelona game tonight, so we'll get to that later.
Yep.
However, I think some dodgy games this weekend, but it finished well, Terry, I think it's fair to say. Didn't
yes.
It finished with Valencia, Real Madrid. And interestingly, I like watching a football match in the wrong order sometimes. It's quite illuminating, because I got in, I was out working, then I got in. And so I watched the last 20 minutes. Valencia just scored, I think, when I turned on. And then I watched the beginning and thought, actually, Real Madrid were all right at the beginning. Valencia put them under a lot of pressure. They are well organised. They're everything you would expect of a Bordalas team, which I've got absolutely no problem with. And I thought, actually, Real Madrid played well under that kind of pressure.
Yeah, it was one of those where they always threatened Real Madrid. Because the severe pressure they faced, it was easy to make the assumption that Valencia were on top. I think they were. And I think they deserve something out of the game. But every now and then, Real Madrid broke free. And when they attacked with pace, with skill, with quality. And it did look as threatening as Valencia's style of play. But it was it made for sometimes styles, you know, do clash and make do suit each other to provide a really good football match. And that was one last night. It was classic Real Madrid at the end. Not only did you think they're struggling to get a point here, they then go and win it with two very late goals. And, Valencia, probably the first time in the game, they took a step back. The substitutions, I don't know whether it was tiredness, I would imagine so with the players. The substitutions probably didn't help, just changing the players. And there was a different mentality. I think Bordalas said for 75 minutes, he thought his team were near perfect. And then the last 50 minutes, they tactically dropped deeper. Which is, you know, is a trait of any team that go into a game thinking they're underdogs, defending the lead and trying to hang on. And Real Madrid take full advantage by just chucking on more and more attacking players, taking off the entire midfield and replacing it, putting more attacking players on. And just the sheer crazy nature of the substitutions from Ancelotti. I mean, at the end of the game, every player was in the final third of Real Madrid. All Valencia players were back, Real Madrid players. We're all in attack, trying to get the equaliser. And then once they got the equaliser, they then realised they had a chance of actually and time left to try and win the game. We're getting more and more added time now in the game. So I think players are gradually getting used to the fact that when it's not 90 minutes, it goes well into, you know, approaching 100 minutes now. And I think Real Madrid, when they equalised, realised that they were the only team that were going to win that game and therefore chucked everything at it still. Didn't settle for the draw. And in true Real Madrid style, Benzema got the winner.
There's something interesting about being a big team, isn't there? Partly, they score late goals. The other teams films. Again, I was watching it with my wife joined us, and funnily enough, as you say about the substitutions, he said, "I thought this game had finished," because he doesn't really pay enough attention because they made all those substitutions and they're all high fiving and shaking hands and everything. No, it's not finished yet. And then I said to my son, I said, "Well, Real Madrid's got a score yet," because there is a big club thing, isn't there? That they score late goals, and it's interesting. I think partly because you've got the level of extreme quality, so you've got an individual who can do something, or as you say, he looks around on the bench, and you know there are good attacking players on the bench.
But
there is also a culture and an expectation, isn't there, that goes with playing for clubs that have a reputation for scoring goals late on. It's a psychological boost, isn't it? It's that belief that we're Real Madrid, we can score a late goal if we need to, even if we haven't played particularly well, or even if we've been on the back foot, we're still Real Madrid, we'll still get something.
And it works against the opposition as well, because the opposition sit there thinking, we've got to hang on here because this team historically, and it's not just this group of players, it's historically for Real Madrid, they do go to the very end and they do get important late goals. And it was interesting, the three subs there that you mentioned, because two went off injured in the first 20-odd minutes for Valencia. So, therefore, he only had one more opportunity to use the subs. I think Bordalás would have preferred to have used, at least to break the game up twice, maybe, to make those three substitutions. But with just one opportunity left to make any further subs, he had no choice but to use all three at once. And it kind of broke up the rhythm. It's not being, you know, disparaging to the players that came on. It was just, they had a well-drilled unit that was working well. And then all of a sudden, three new players come on in it. And suddenly, there was no one to support. Marcus Andre came on up front. Whereas Maxi Gomez had been supported by Guedes. All of a sudden, Marcus Andre dropped deep. And Daniel Vaz was the only player that was trying to get anywhere near to Marcus Andre. So therefore, everybody from Valencia was back. Which made it even more surprising that Vinicius was able to find room on a couple of occasions, one to score the goal when he was set up by Benzema. And you imagine everybody is in that little area of the pitch, yet somehow Benzema was able to find Vinicius in space, a lot of space, to have the shot that was deflected off Fulquier. And then Vinicius found space again to deliver the cross for Benzema to score from close range, which was a bit of a mess defensively from Valencia. Didn't stop the cross. They kind of accepted the cross coming in, and then the goalkeeper and the two centre-backs all clashed, and Benzema got in between the lot of them and got something on it to get it home. So it was tough on Valencia, I have to be honest. I think it was like, in boxing terms, Simon Handley, who I commentated with, said that they would have won on points by half-time, it would have been over. But every now and then, Real Madrid had a knockout blow, didn't they? So Valencia were throwing loads of jabs and loads of combinations, and then all of a sudden Real Madrid attacked, and it looked just as threatening as Valencia piling on the pressure. They had other chances, Valencia, that they didn't take, which is always an issue when you're playing so well, and you're playing one of the big teams and you don't finish them off, and then you come to the last 10 minutes of the game and you're still only one goal ahead. So it was tough on Valencia. I thought they played really well, players missing before the start of the game, and then losing Carlos Soler, in particular, early in the match, was a blow. Correa then going off injured. I think both players had gone off just after the 20-minute mark. So it was an interesting team selection from Bordalás as well, with Fulquier playing left-back instead of Tony Lato, who eventually came on. And Hugo Duro scored, who's a centre-forward playing on the left side of midfield. So it was an entirely new setup on the left to start with for Valencia. But it's great to see the players who probably got fed up with being battered last year by supporters and media, and Valencia didn't have a good team, good season. And then all of a sudden, Bordalás comes in and we're all wondering, how's this going to work? How are Gonzalo Guedes and Carlos Soler and Maxi Gomez and people like that going to take to his style? And they've really embraced it. And I think they love the fact now that they're all action. They're really hard to play against because they just try to suffocate teams and close people down, and it's good to watch. It makes for good attacking football. I thought they deserved something from the game last night. So, but that's football, you know. You don't always get what you deserve, and you can lose in cruel circumstances, heartbreaking circumstances. Sometimes you think, how did we not get anything from that game? And unfortunately for Valencia, they came up against Real Madrid, it was just a one goal behind them, still believed they could get something. And then when they got the equaliser, as I say, they genuinely believed then that they could get all 3 points. The substitutions were good for Real Madrid. I have no idea where they were all playing, apart from in the attacking third. But Camavinga at 18 has got real presence. I mean, he comes on and he's getting stuck in and he's making good use of the ball. And, you know, it's the third time now he's appeared. We've seen him. And at 18, looks to be, you know, a real good signing for Real Madrid for the long term, but also he's having an immediate impact, which is probably surprising, you know, to a lot of people.
Yeah, I had a quick look actually. He was his average position slapped back on the centre circle actually, Camavinga, which probably suggested that he was running around all over the place. Well, not all over the place in a negative kind of way. And Isco, interestingly, I think was the deepest of all the midfielders. For Real Madrid, which was interesting.
Hazard played well in the first half. Yeah. He looked sharper, and he's, you know, the people are wondering whether he's going to have that burst of pace. But I think we saw enough occasions last night that he has, and that was one of the reasons, I think, particularly in the first half when Real Madrid were under pressure and they were finding it hard to get out the back into midfield. But every now and then, when they did, and they got a little bit of space and they broke free, Hazard was the main instigator of any good attacking play that they had. So it was a great game of football.
Centre-backs defence for Real Madrid, just before we move on from them. So obviously Carvajal went off. So all the plans, it's interesting. You know, the manager did all these plans, like you say. Bordalas, let's have a new plan down the left. And it was torn up 20 minutes in, wasn't it? Because players were injured. So Lucas Vazquez came on and played right back. He obviously... was at fault for the goal because he sort of ducks out of a header, doesn't it? Sort of bounces off him and goes to Ubaldura. However, my slight fear of Real Madrid's defence at the moment, there's no dominant centre-back. I think Alaba is a wonderful player, and I think Militao has got lots of qualities as well. Someone should have just got headed that ball before. It shouldn't have been left to Lucas Vazquez to be ducking underneath it. I think that's why Ramos go and head it.
Also, he left his man. He left Hugo Lloris, who was marking him, sort of recognised that maybe the two centre-backs weren't going to get it. He made the wrong choice to go towards the ball, and then he kind of looked as if he thought one of them was going to head it, and he pulled his head out of the way of it. And it fell to Hugo Lloris, finished it off well. But I think you're right. I think there were enough times last night where Valencia possibly should have scored more, and it is going to be an issue. But it's not a surprise you lose Ramos and Varane, as you already mentioned. And you've got a new partnership, and I wouldn't say either of the two players that Real Madrid have got now are up to the standard of Varane and Ramos. But that is an extremely high standard. There's still two good players, very good players, but it is going to be an issue. But they're just going to keep scoring. I mean, it's Vinicius and Benzema have got 11 between them in the league. You look at other teams in the league, there's loads of teams that haven't got 11 goals. And those two are the real deal at the moment.
So Real Madrid are top. Briefly, Valencia were top, weren't they, in the live table until that late turnaround. That's because Atletico Madrid drew 0-0 with Athletic, who are one of those teams. I look up how many goals Athletic have scored. Not many is the answer, but they don't concede any either, do they? Can we do the red card for João Felix, first of all? It annoys me. No sympathy for... if a player dissents the referee... Dissents, is that a word? You can't do that. You can't go shouting at match officials. Your punishment comes your way, right? No, but even if the decision was wrong, you can't then shout at them. However, the decision was very wrong. I thought it was ridiculous. Now, some people have got different views. People I respect have got different views. My view of it was, basically, Defensor grabs him, doesn't it? He grabs him and pulls him back. Now, one for the Patreons who can see us, he doesn't, in my view, swing an arm.
No.
João Felix, he is running.
I agree.
Rather, like, you know, when they attach the bungee in sprint training, they attach the bungee rope and you've got to run. And in order to run, when someone's pulling you back, you've got to pump your arms a bit, haven't you? So I think he's just naturally running. I think it's just that's the natural running pose of a bloke who's being dragged backwards.
And then disrupted by someone pulling you back and losing a little bit of balance in your running action.
Yeah.
And the back of your hands catching Vencedor.
So if Vencedor gets a whack in the face, I'm afraid, bad luck, mate. Enjoy your fifth limb. Don't pull someone when they're running if you don't want to be caught by an arm.
I was confused with the situation, why he picked up the first yellow. I couldn't believe it was before that. And he sort of replays, and you think, oh, he's off, throwing his arm out. And then when you see it again, slow motion at a different angle, I agree 100%. It was a running action. And when you're running and someone pulls you off balance and pulls you back, your arm does go back. Now, I know a lot of people are going to disagree, but I didn't think it was. The referee demonstrated why he booked him, didn't he?
And demonstrated something else. Yeah,
exactly. A real thrust of the elbow into the player's face. If he feels that, then it should have been a straight red card. But I agree with you totally. I didn't think it was anything more than a running action disrupted by a player pulling his shirt. And Joao Felix then said, "Are you crazy? Are you crazy?" That's what he said to the referee. And the referee, I just feel sometimes referees can take the heat out of the situation and then tell one of his teammates, move him on. You know, if he's going to get in trouble if he continues. By that time, Joao Felix said it twice and walked away.
Yeah.
And he had his back to the referee when he got the second yellow.
Yeah, he's not in his face, is he? And he doesn't swear at him. So there is a match management thing. Again, I don't want to give license to players slagging off referees or...
No, totally. Yes.
But there is a match management, especially if you have just given a decision and it might be wrong. And in the heat of the moment, the guy says to you, blah, blah, or whatever, or, you know, expression of, you know, I'm frustrated. And, you know, in a short... few bursts of words, I'm frustrated. Yeah. I think you've got to manage that situation, I think, as a referee.
I agree. Because we want to keep the players on. It's not just this incident. It does happen quite often now where a player, two yellows in the space of seconds. But Joao Felix had walked away from it. His back was turned. And it's something he must have realised because he looked over his shoulder when he must have heard the crowd noise of the players and saw the red card. And that's when he lost it. He kicked the ball into the crowd. When he went off in the tunnel, he's got pent up frustration. He wants to be playing more. He wants to be a more valuable member of the team, and it coincides with what he feels was a wrong decision. And to say you're crazy, isn't the worst thing I've ever heard said to a referee.
Yes.
I've said worse. But I think the man management of a referee in that situation with the player and the game management. Should be one where if Joao Felix is in his face, effing and blinding, that's totally different getting close to the referee. But I felt it was one where the referee could have just let it calm down a bit and then continue with the game.
Yeah,
so there's talk of Joao Felix getting punished even more because of his outburst as he walked off the pitch as well. So, if it is reviewed, I'm pretty sure it won't be. The actual incident, the two incidents that led to the sending off. But there is a possibility that having kicked the ball in the crowd as he walked off, that there might even be a further ban. So, but in terms of how Atletico play, exactly the same. They play well. They just haven't found the right formula for actually creating chances. It's not just taking chances. It's not as if we're going game after game with Atletico thinking, well, he missed the sitter. You know, they should have scored 4 or 5. They play really well, but are really struggling to connect with each other in the forward line to the extent that they didn't create many chances in this game. Very few, 2 or 3 half chances. And yet they played well. And this has been a theme throughout the opening part of the season so far for Simeone's Atletico.
Almost too many questions, almost. He's got there,
too many good players at the moment, isn't it?
Which is a weird thing to say, isn't it? It's always, that's a good problem to have. But actually, it is a problem sometimes, isn't it? It's just because he's also, I think sometimes the 5 subs, there's an obvious advantage to the 5 subs, as we saw with Valencia when they lost a couple of players to an injury or it didn't work out for them. It means that the manager almost feels obliged to get all these players onto the pitch, and he's able to get 5 of them on to use 7 forwards if he wants to in the course of the game. and it just looks like a bit of a mess to me, Atletico, in that respect.
Yep, there's no understanding between the current crop of attacking players. They're all different types, and it you kind of feel that squad rotation is great on one end, then a midweek game in the Champions League, then they've got a tough game at the weekend against Athletic Club, so he can freshen it up and rotate. A couple of players injured as well in Coca and Lamar, which goes to show the strength of the squad, and that Kondogbia comes in and plays really well. Marcus Llorente plays really well. Rodrigo De Paul plays really well. So there was no issue there with Lamar and Coco being missing, but it's just the forward line. I think Simeone's going to have to show a little bit of patience with maybe a few of them. We're not sure yet what Griezmann's role is in the team. We're not sure exactly where he's playing just yet. And it was Griezmann and Correa to start the game. Suarez coming off the bench, Cunha coming off the bench. So he's going to need some patience, I think, to persevere with a fewer of them to try and get Joao Felix, of course, a little bit more. So they can get a partnership and they can start gelling. And you know, Carrasco does some great work, but it must be frustrating at times because he beats one player and then you think it's the right time to cross it and he cuts back again and then he cuts back again. And you can see Suarez adjusting his movement, making one run, making two runs. But a third time, Suarez is thinking, come on, mate, you should have passed that quicker. You know, I was in position once, maybe twice. Now I've got to make another move to try and get across the defender and it's not going to happen. So little things like that, which develop when you're playing together on a more regular basis. And also, I think there's an air of anxiety about Atletico in attack. You know, they're playing so well and they're so desperate to score and they start games on the front foot. And if that goal doesn't come, then they start getting anxious and they make the wrong decisions, the wrong choices. Correa on a couple of occasions overdid it as well when he could have either shot or passed to someone else. So it's a frustrating period for Atletico in terms of in front of the goal.
However, former Atletico striker Radamel Falcao is back with a bang, yep. As I said, and a goal for Rayo Vallecano in a 3-0 derby win over Getafe. And very well received, isn't it? He didn't play in La Liga for much of his career. You know, he had a couple of years, didn't he, at Atletico. Yeah. He had two brilliant years with them as they were emerging into becoming a force. And then they sold him for a lot of money to Monaco, which I never quite... Because he didn't want to go, subsequent interviews revealed. It wasn't him forcing himself out, was it? It was like his owners, and it was a weird situation, wasn't it? So good to have him back. Right, Vallecano... We worried for them at the start of the season. They're bottom of our predictions league, but
rightly so.
Because it makes sense that they would. Now they're looking all right, aren't they?
Looking more than all right. And Sergio Guardiola was a good signing as well. And so we kept saying in the first couple of weeks, and they themselves admitted they needed something different in the final third of the pitch in the attacking area, and they came up with Sergio Guardiola and most impressively Falcao. It's an incredible story to think that he's chosen to go there. And his comments, he looks in great shape, first and foremost, doesn't he? He looks fit, he looks lean, he looks sharp. He's 35 years old. And we're wondering, is he going to, you know, embrace the idea of playing for one of the minnows in La Liga? And he, after the game, he said he dreamt the night before that he would come on as a sub and score a goal. And from all of what he's achieved in football so far, to still have that passion, enthusiasm and excitement at the age of 35 to play for Rayo Vallecano, it speaks volumes for his character. And I saw him play, I probably said on the podcast, for Manchester United under 23s with Victor Valdez at Old Trafford a few years back. And Falcao was in trouble. He couldn't move, couldn't twist, couldn't turn, couldn't sprint. He got substituted. He was close to tears. He was the worst player on the pitch. And I left that game that night feeling sadness because I've always been a massive admirer of Falcao. So for him to turn his career around after what appeared to me that night watching that game, that he was finished because of the injury, to have a successful period at Monaco, Galatasaray, to still want to play at the age of 35. And it's a great addition to La Liga. It's a great story. It was a fantastic strike, classic Falcao strike. He did so many things right in that 3 or 4 seconds to score that goal. He bent his run. He kept on side. He let the ball run across his body so the first touch would be out of his feet. And then the finish towards the far post. It was textbook Falcao. You know, there were so many things that other strikers would have done. They'd have been facing the ball instead of opening their body up. They would have run into an offside position. And the pass from Pathé Cisse, who looked a good player, who scored the second goal for Rao as well. They looked, you know, it was an invitation for Falcao to say, with his movement, put it there. And Pathé Cisse put it between the defenders. Falcao knew exactly the distance between the centre-back and the full-back. It was a brilliant goal. To analyse, it was a pleasure because there were so many things he did well that shows the difference between an elite striker and other strikers that we saw at the weekend that would have made at least one of those decisions wrong that would have led to it being offside or having another touch, getting tackled by a defender and stuff like that. He did it to perfection. It was a brilliant goal.
Falcao stay in the Premier League, so illustrative of the Premier League at that time, wasn't it? It's sort of, it's extraordinary that he was a guy of undoubted ability, class, world-class striker, but he just literally wasn't fit, and he still managed to play for two huge Premier League clubs, get paid an absolute fortune to play these two seasons. And it was just bizarre. But anyway,
it's good. And to come back as well, because as I say, I clearly thought we'd seen the last of Falcao. He looked, really down and beating himself up, and it was just, you could see him physically not being able to do what he wanted to do. So to come back and score the goals he did at Monaco and Galatasaray, a significant amount of goals as well for Monaco. And he looks at the weekend, the knee problem obviously is an issue anymore, and fantastic story for Raya.
Betis 2, Espanyol 2, so exciting game there. Nabil Fekir, Terry, is another player of huge ability. What's Fekir's level? Is he right at Betis, or should he be a slightly less important player at a better team? Betis is a massive club, not yet a brilliant team.
Yeah, I think where he is suits him. I think he's playing majority of the games. He's regarded as an important player, and I'm sure he's getting paid well. Lives in a lovely city, plays for a team that has incredible support. Yeah, if I was Fekir, I would stay put. I think I would rather do that than go and play for a club with a bigger squad and not be as influential, not be idolised by the supporters. I think I would rather do what he's doing at Betis. I think the partnership with him and Canales is a clear evidence of two players on the same wavelength. When those two play, and they play together and they play well, Betis play well. It was an incredible game, actually, because it was quite similar to the Real Madrid game, where Espanyol were battered. And the beginning of the second, they go ahead, then Betis get two goals just before half-time. And then for 15, 20 minutes in the second half, at the start of the half, you thought that Betis were going to run away with it, 3-4, 5-1. Didn't take their chances. And then there's a sending off. And then all of a sudden, Espanyol were able to chuck extra players forward. And Cabrera, the big centre-back, unleashed a unstoppable shot from outside the penalty area, and Espanyol got away with a draw. So I think it was a good performance in general by Betis. Again, I thought that was a controversial red card for Guido. I think the tackle on Alex Vidal is of two players going for the ball, and occasionally, John, it's a split second difference where someone does get a kick on the shin. It was a nasty cut to Alex Vidal on the shin, but I didn't think there was any intent then from it was Pozzella, wasn't it, who got sent off. I didn't think there was any intent from the centre-back to injure, to foul. I think it was just, as I describe it, as an occupational hazard, that sometimes you do get a whack on the shin or a bump on the head. So I think that, that turned the game, although Espanyol, just the one goal behind, was still in it. But once they went down to 10 men, they took advantage. And as I say, they got a valuable point in the end. So Betis will be disappointed. They had a good week. Beat Celtic, beat Granada, should have beat Espanyol, but it just didn't come off.
We need to take a break. I forgot we haven't had a sort of podcast with adverts for a while, Terry. So let's take a quick break. And after the break, everybody, we'll come back and discuss a couple of goalless draws. Yes, and welcome back. Don't forget, patreon.com/LTEL, and you can join the Patreon fun and support the podcast. The whackings are the bargain signings at the moment. Or you can be a higher level if you want to. And thank you to all the patrons who are at a higher level, the Gutis, the Valdinos, the Toperos. Yes, anyway, so we do extra stuff, and it, through the course of the summer, we had some of the Patreons on as well, which was great, wasn't it? Because it's so knowledgeable about Spanish football. It's quite humbling, actually, how much people know who correspond with us. So they all sit and obviously love a goal. Football purists, Terry, love a goalless draw. Everyone loves nothing more than that. So no shortage of those this weekend. Mallorca, let's do Mallorca Villarreal. Let me just read out this from Lex Luthor, one of our Patreons. The irritation shows through. When you discuss Villarreal on the next pod, he says, I hope you touch on why Gaspar, Asenjo, Alcacer are not in the first 11 of late. Now, dropping tried and tested players in the league for error-prone Foyt and Rui and misfiring Deer is just bizarre and stubborn to me, especially Foyt. I lost hope for that bloke while he was at Spurs. Otherwise, it's been a good weekend.
I think the balance in midfield wasn't great, was it? Kepa and Coquelin. Pereja was on the bench. He's just come back from injury, so he's rested. So there's a degree of creativity lost there for Villarreal. I agree. I think Gaspar has been unfortunate to lose his place. Asenjo has been unfortunate to lose his place in the league and in the Champions League, really, is playing now. So I think that's a big call from Unai Emery. Dia is misfiring at the moment. Alcacer probably should get more opportunities. Danjuma looks to be their most dangerous player at the moment. So there are issues with Villarreal. Four games, 4 points, four draws. It's not a shock now, is it? And they started the game off, though, in good fashion, but it didn't last. I mean, first 10 minutes, they had two or three good opportunities, some, and a bit of a goal mouth scramble, which Danjuma was involved in. And then that was pretty much it after that. Fernino had a couple of half chances. Danny Rodriguez went close with a shot that went over the crossbar, but other than that, wasn't. And as the game went on, I'm slightly disappointed that Mallorca didn't make more of the opportunity. But then you look at it and you think, well, it's a newly promoted team with some new players still settling in, and they're playing the team that won the Europa League last season. So I can understand why they were a little bit reluctant to chuck more at it in terms of getting the win. So Mallorca probably were pleased with the point, but Villarreal have to do more than just be solid. Hard to beat. That isn't the Villarreal style that we've become accustomed to for the last 20 years now. It has changed.
Played six, drawn six.
In all competitions. I know.
A couple of those were decent games, but three goals was in there as well. Yeah.
Too much hint of caution, too much, I think, from Villarreal. We're going to be hard to beat, but at the same time, you've got to take a chance to try and win games.
So why did Real Sociedad Sevilla finish 0-0 in the end, Terry?
Because Oyarzabal missed the penalty.
He can't take a penalty. He's got a reputation as a penalty taker. He's not.
Yeah. Yesterday, I think the little hop that he does, pays off if the goalkeeper goes the wrong way, doesn't it? But yesterday he went straight down the middle and Bono was able to actually kick the ball away.
Yeah,
just hit his legs. He kicked it away.
He's been getting away with that penalty and there's not enough deceit in it. And then the final strike of the ball isn't good enough. To bring Ivan Toney to the La Liga Weekly podcast for the first time, Brentford striker, people don't know.
Yep.
He does a bit of deceit, but then he smashes it in the corner. So, he does the slow step and he tries to make the keeper move, but the strike of the ball is good.
Yeah,
which we I think
we've you still need that. Jorginho does it at Chelsea. When he gets away with it, oh look,
the deceit isn't enough. You still also now because keepers are you can't. It moves on quite quickly, doesn't it? And keepers think, he's going to do. I know what he's going to do.
So he's going to jump significant jump before the ball.
Yeah.
Stay still. Don't go.
Yeah. And then
the strike isn't that great. I've got a chance of saving it.
Yeah.
So I think that was the biggest reason. I mean, Sevilla, it was a weird game. Real Sociedad were clearly the better team in the first half. Lopetegui makes changes at halftime, and Sevilla were much improved in the second. But Sevilla are similar to Atletico. They don't create an abundance of chances. They have good play, but when you look back at the highlights of the game afterwards, there was a couple of long-range efforts. And that was probably the sum total of Sevilla's attacking play. So Lopetegui has to come up with something. Again, they're hard to beat, hard to score against. But they have to somehow find Villarreal, Atletico, Sevilla. If they really want to challenge, if Villarreal want to get in the top four, if Atletico want to regain the title, if Sevilla want to I think, challenge for the title, then something has to change in terms of the amount of chances they create, because for all three teams, it's nowhere near enough at the moment. So I think a draw was a fair result in the end, actually, because I think Sevilla had the better the second half. But of course, if Ozabu does score the penalty, then we'd be talking about a different match. So Bono pulled off the save. And at that stage, after the Mallorca-Villarreal game, Real Sociedad nil, Sevilla nil, we're getting concerned that we're going to be really having another one of those weekends where there weren't enough goals to satisfy us all.
Let's have a look at the relegation battle, which involves, Terry, Celta Vigo. Now, last week, I think it was last week on the pod, wasn't it? You were a little bit annoyed. You expressed your frustration with the Celta Vigo players who got a couple of managers sacked, as you put it, in the past, a sort of group of players. And they're beaten at home by Cadiz. You know what Cadiz are going to do. You know how they're going to play it. And Celta Vigo fell victim to it.
22% possession this week for Cadiz.
Yeah, that's
they had three attempts on target. One was a goal. Another one was a penalty, which was missed. And Espino then follows up with the third attempt on target to tap home the rebound. It was baffling how they're doing it. Salvi Sanchez gets up and down the pitch on the right flank. Lozano showed some pace on the counter-attack in the game on Friday night, which caused Celta problems. But I'm baffled that no one's finding a way out to play and beat Cadiz. Teams are struggling to do it. Conceding a goal from a set piece isn't ideal when a team is reluctant to throw too much into attacking play, to look to hit on the break. You concede a cheap set piece and then you defend it poorly. And Cadiz scored. Great delivery from Alcaron, where Lozano finishes it off with a flashing header. But Celta, again, they missed chances in this game. And they were unlucky. I think it was a better performance in this game. But they weren't playing Real Madrid, so you'd expect that. A couple of chances hit the bar towards the end. Second half, they really did pile on the pressure after Sentimin scored. But they, again, finished without a point, which leaves them, you know. I think they'll be all right. Whether the club are patient with Caldet, the manager, whether they make a change, but 1 point is a little bit of a worry at the moment.
But they are better off than Alaves, for example, who lost 2-0 at home to Osasuna. And tough start to the season, is it? Getafe got no points, and Alaves played a game less, haven't they? Because they missed last weekend, yes, didn't they? But they're 0 points and a minus 9 goal difference for 4 games.
Yeah, just one goal scored.
Yeah, obvious problem, isn't it?
And at the same time, Lucas Perez, who they couldn't wait to get rid of, is scoring goals for Elche.
Yes.
Playing with a bit of fire in his belly and complaining after every game about Alaves. So that does look like they've made the mistake there. Somehow they could have handled that situation better because they are lacking a player that can score goals. Not creative team selection from Kayeka. Palestri came on from Manchester United on loan. He was desperate to go back. They were desperate to keep him. We'll play him then. Luis Rioja had a couple of early good attempts, and that was it. Nothing else from Alaves. And Osasuna, after the 4-1 defeat last week against Valencia, were comfortable winners. So Osasuna are a decent, well-organised, well-coached team. And they were up against an Alaves team who were low on spirit, low on confidence. And looks like it's going to be a long season for Alaves. Will they persist with Kayeka? They'll be reluctant to make a change because last season they had 3 managers in one campaign. So they won't want to make the change early again this season because he did so well when he started, you know, managing them last year. Took over what I thought was a hopeless situation. Got them playing well. Edgar Mendes was playing well. He was missing at the weekend. Rioja was playing well. Hossele was playing well and scoring goals. But we haven't seen that same attacking trio function as well as they did for the last 10 games of last season.
Yeah, yeah. So there's the league table for Patreon. So Elche, Levante are mid-table, aren't they? Elche 12th and Levante 15th, who drew 1-1 this weekend. Are we starting to look? I haven't put the league table up before this. It's getting there, isn't it? This league table.
Yes.
I know Barcelona have got two games in hand, so obviously they've only got 7 points at the moment. But yeah, obviously there's plenty of movement yet to come. But you know, it wouldn't be a great shock at you know, move Barcelona up a bit, that it ends up something like that. And Villarreal are obviously not in a good place there, are they? 14th.
No, I think they would be the one exception in the bottom half of the division. But I think the rest of the bottom half, Granada again, have only played four, but they played Barcelona away in their game in hand. They did win their last season. So that's going to be an interesting game on Monday evening. But I think the rest of the league is panning out. I think maybe Rayo and Mallorca, maybe Osasuna might not finish in seventh, but I think top half, bottom half is looking pretty familiar already. Getafe is struggling big time as well. And Mitchell looks as if he's panicking a bit now, changing the system every game. Not really sure of his best start in 11. Janko got injured at the weekend. He's been their best player this season. So that'd be a worry that he's out. So I think, don't see any major changes top half, bottom half, particularly the bottom seven or eight. Levante got to start winning games. They draw too many as well. Espanyol, newly promoted. Determination got them a point at the weekend. As you say, Celta, Getafe, Alaves need to find the improvement. So I think Celta will be all right, but I don't expect them to be in the top half of the division again this season.
Which just leaves us, obviously, Barcelona play tonight against Granada. Really good game for a Monday night. So we discussed them after their defeat against Bayern Munich, just with the Patreon, so Terry. And your main takeaway from that really was that Koeman needs to liven himself up a little bit, doesn't he? He needs to. I think you used the expression "stop moping about" and go from where Barcelona are. There is no point now. Unless you're one of the people involved in putting the finances right, you've just got to move on from that, haven't you? You've got to go from where Barcelona are and dealing with the playing squad they've got and making the best of it. Moping around, talking about, I haven't got this, I haven't got that, I've got to play the kids. It's not what they need now.
Deal with it. Deal with it. That was in the same way that Bordalas has done with Valencia. They haven't gone out and spent loads of money this year. We had nothing but moans from Valencia last year and about they sold their best players or gave their best players away. And this, you know, one thing or another, Bordalas comes in and makes the best of it. And Koeman's got to do exactly that. It's not his issue now, as you said, the finances of the club. And I think there are players that he needs to recover. I mentioned Semel Umtiti. Clement Longley could have played at left back last week, but he chose to put on Balde, who's a young player. And I think it was just the emphasis there was, well, we're getting beat by Bayern Munich. I'm going to put the kids on and say, it just says to everyone clearly, I've only got youngsters to play. That strictly isn't the case. Yes, there's injuries, significant injuries, particularly in the attacking part of the team. But you have to make do and do what you can to give Barcelona the best chance of sticking in the league title race, sticking in the Champions League to make sure they do qualify for the knockout stages and knuckle down and get on with it. You know, he's not the physio. He can't do anything about the return of Fati, Dembele, Aguero. You know, Griezmann leaving just before the deadline. Braithwaite picking up an injury as well. But they've still got lots of good players, Barcelona, even with the injured players. And he's going to have to come up with solutions. Now, if you haven't got three strikers, then work something out with just the two that you've got. But it has to be better than what we saw against Bayern Munich. I just didn't feel the manager there gave. I thought he didn't give his players the best chance of competing against Bayern Munich. And as the game went on, he didn't give his best opportunity to his players to actually avoid a heavy defeat. I think it was just a case of in the camp now, in front of the supporters, in front of the president, this is all I've got, so I'm going to keep putting on young players. I don't think it was an ideal time to put on young players when they're playing against one of the best teams in Europe, and you're getting beat, and there's a weird atmosphere in the stadium. As I said, then he could have put Longley on, he could have put Umtiti on, he could have kept Pjanic, but he didn't. He could have put Riqui Puig on, but he doesn't. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to witnessing the atmosphere, the mood. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the younger players because Pedri is injured. He's another one that's missing for the game. tonight. And Jordi Alba is missing, so I expect Baldé to play at left back, the young 18-year-old. So just be interesting to see what's at the Camp Nou tonight.
Yes. A classic one of the passive aggressive manager is when they don't fill their bench up. And, you know, they can name seven on the bench and they only put six.
Exactly.
On because they're letting everybody know. And if they grow up, there is someone at your club. We can go on that. There is. You're running youth teams and stuff.
It does happen.
So don't be giving us the whole, just grow up and get on with it. It's not a good situation. It's not Barcelona that we used to. All of that, but you know, this is where you are. You know, kick off tonight and you do what you best. There we are. Right. So all that told, Terry will enjoy the game. Well, we'll see. But enjoy the game, might not.
Yeah,
be the worst.
No, I'll be enjoying going to a live game. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we do it all again straight away. So straight back into another round of La Liga games. And we'll be back with another podcast. So don't forget to join us on the Patreon, everybody, soon. Thank you to the Patreons. Thank you for listening. And enjoy the football, everybody. I'll see you again soon.